Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You want a head job somewhere and you don't control where that is. So it's kind of like, well, what if it's this place or what if it's that place? Do you take it? Or, you know, I could sit there and wait on Georgia forever. Today's day and age with the transfer portal, it gives you a way out. I'd heard all year from friends in Tuscaloosa that they liked the younger quarterback better than Jalen. I kept hearing that. I would hear that. Now, of course, I didn't think we were going to play him.
Yo, welcome to a special edition of All Things Covered, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. The name says it all. It's me, B-Mac, and you're about to hear a dope conversation I had with Georgia head football coach Kirby Smart. Pat will be with us tomorrow for our full-length episode featuring another big-time guest. I repeat, another big-time guest will be joining us here on All Things Covered. If you like what you hear, download and subscribe and make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Just visit youtube.com/allthingscovered. And now, the man of the hour, Kirby Smart. Welcome, listeners, viewers, All Things Covered. Just like the mailman, we will deliver a top-notch guest every week. You better believe it. You can count on that. And once again, we have an outstanding guest joining us here. This individual is well-known throughout the college football ranks. This individual is well-known throughout football ranks. A 4-time national champion as an assistant, 2017 SEC champion for the Georgia Bulldogs. He's joining us right now as he's currently getting ready to participate in the Peach Bowl this Friday against Cincinnati. Kirby Smart, head coach, Georgia football program, outstanding individual. And Kirby, before we get into football, right, I want to just give the listeners a little insight about me and your relationship. I first met Kirby Smart 1999. And as you guys know, who've been following the show, I was a top rated corner coming out of South Florida, Hollywood MacArthur. You see the Mustang jersey in the back to my left. So my 5 official visits were to Miami, Florida State, Tennessee, Michigan, and Georgia. So when I visited Georgia, I flew into Atlanta Airport, Hartsfield Jackson Airport. And guess who picked me up from the airport? Kirby Smart.
Kirby Smart.
Yes, sir.
Guess who didn't sign, B-Mac? Kirby Smart.
But hey, Kirby, you had the trailblazer. You remember you had the trailblazer, right? That was the trailblazer you had?
Trailblazer, sure was.
Yes, sir.
So I was a GA. I was freshly cut from 98 season by the Indianapolis Colts. I'd been at the Colts with Marvin Harrison and Peyton Manning. Didn't last long. I came back, decided to get into coaching, and the first job they gave me was like, okay, you got to be able to recruit. So they sent me to the airport to pick up all the big 5 stars that were flying in. B-Mac was flying in. He was supposed to be the top corner of the country, and we had to sign him. I was young then. I was fresh out of college, but I didn't sign B-Mac. But, you know, I still got the coaching.
No question. We're going to talk about that also. It's a small world. I tell people all the time, it's a small world. You never know who you may meet and who you might meet again. And Kirby, man, that was a nice ride from Atlanta to Athens, being able to talk with you then. And never know, at that time, didn't think I would potentially see you again if I didn't sign with Athens. But we're going to talk about how we reunited later on in my collegiate career. But first and foremost, Kirby, an unprecedented season when you talk about sports in general. Right. Collegiately, professionally, there was a lot that was going on with the pandemic. You know what I mean? And the safety of the players and the coaches, the fans, the whole nine. But looking at the season, you guys were able to finish the regular season. How did you think the season went overall?
You know, it was very unique, B-Mac. I've never experienced, and I've been fortunate to coach right at, you know, 21 years. It was absolutely so different. I mean, the stress and the pressure that the players were under, student athletes, so many of our guys lost a routine. The routine used to be, man, I get up, I go to class, I go to academics, I see normal students, I have a social life. And now it was like, I'm living in a room. I'm doing all my classes in a room. I'm on a Zoom. And then I go over to football. Then I go back home and I repeat the process. And it really put like the off season put our guys in some dark places, man, because they weren't seeing family members. They weren't allowed to go anywhere socially. And, you know, as young men, we like to be in a college town, go out, do things, meet people, see people on campus. They had no social life outside of football. And it was just very different. It was just very different for our kids this year.
Well, you had two cancellations and one postponed game. You know, how did you keep the guys focused and dialed in when games were getting canceled and there was nothing you can do about it?
Nothing you can do about it. And you didn't find out what's what got us. So you would practice all week and, you know, you get to Thursday and it's kind of like, okay, man, we're ready to go. And then bam, game's canceled. I'm like, wait, we just practiced 4 or 5 days for this. So now you're telling me we're going to play that team again in 2 weeks. And the kids are like, we got to practice again 4 or 5 days to get ready. You know, that got to be taxing mentally on them. And it was tough not knowing the unknown. I mean, every day you might go to practice, we're pulling a guy, like we're going to flex and we're going, oh, okay, he's out today. His COVID test came back and he's positive. And I'm like, wow, wait. So he's not out there. So he had all these reps and now he's pulled. And then you got to contact trace him. So his roommate's out. So your practice organization, because the test didn't come back maybe as fast as we wanted. We tested, you know, one day and then we didn't get the results back till the next day. It was the most different thing I've ever experienced. And our guys really handled it well. And it was like, if he's out and I'm up, then I got to go play his position.
Yeah, no question. You guys did handle the situation as well as possible. Guys were dialed in and focused. And because of that, you're getting prepared for an upcoming bowl game this Friday in Atlanta. You make the quick drive up to Atlanta, getting ready for this Peach Bowl matchup against Cincinnati. What are you looking for from your ball club in this ball game coming up against Cincinnati?
Man, we got to play one of our best games. You know, they're an undefeated team, so they played really well. What gets you is when you look and you got nine seniors starting on defense. When you got nine seniors starting in college football, I mean, you got opt-outs, you got juniors come out early, you got transfers. These guys got nine seniors. I mean, that's like unheard of. I don't know the time anybody in the SEC had nine seniors, because what happens is you're always replacing players that either left early because they could go play in the NFL, or they weren't playing and they transferred because they were supposed to be playing. They thought they should have been. You just never see nine seniors on a team anymore. So they all know the defense really well. Offensively, they got the player of the year at quarterback. So, I mean, we're looking for our guys to play our best game. And unfortunately, you know, we got three or four guys that are going to be draft picks that have decided they're going to not play in the bowl game, which I understand and respect, but it gives another guy a chance.
Yeah.
We're going to have some new faces out there.
Yeah, no question. And you talk about this is an opportunity for guys who probably didn't play as much as they wanted to during the season to show up and show you guys as a staff that they can be dependable going forward. And you look at the college football ranks, of course, you know, when it comes to the playoff standpoint, you know, every big name school has playoff aspirations. And the top four teams were released over a week ago. Do you believe they got it right? Did the best four teams make the playoffs?
Well, my personal rankings that I had to send in, it's they publicize your rankings. You know, if you're a coach that's one of the coaches poll, you know, I picked a couple SEC schools in there, and I know you're a big ACC guy, so I gotta tread lightly on that. But I like to
we know filter here and all things covered, coach. You know, you're a DB, a former DB, I'm a former DB. We gotta take chances. Yeah. So what was your top four?
Well, I mean, it probably was unfair to a lot of teams out there, and I'll probably get, you know, chastised for it. But I just feel like Alabama was there, Clemson was there, and then after them, it's really a debate. I feel like those are the two best teams in college football. But with the schedule and the rigors that our guys play, and I always go off NFL guys. I always ask guys, where's the best football played? Where's the most talent? And they're like, year in, year out, the SEC has been drafted. And it doesn't mean that they're the best teams. And you're asking, who are the best teams? But I know the most talent conference, and having played Texas A&M in Florida, you know, those are two teams that I feel like one of the two probably should have been in the four, and it didn't happen, you know. So you live with it, you deal with it. The great thing is you get to have that debate. You know, guys like you get to sit back and say, who should it be? Because you can argue eight teams would be in there. And if they had eight, who ninth and tenth were. But I definitely think the SEC team should have been included.
And to back that point from you, you know, me just covering college football throughout the year, specifically the SEC having the game of the week on CBS, Ohio State, they can say whatever they want to say about Ohio State, about the talent and the expectations. You should not be able to get the same opportunity as a team that played a full season when you only played six ball games. Because the thing I know about football, and you know as well as a coach, the more opportunities you step on the football field, the more opportunities you have to lose, right? And we saw two close ball games with Indiana and Northwestern, and they won them. But me personally, that's not fair to the other teams that went to battle 10 games. you know, 9 games, whatever the case may be, whatever COVID allowed you to do, right? And you took advantage of those opportunities. So me personally, I have an asterisk behind Ohio State. And the same can be said for Notre Dame. Me personally, Notre Dame, I know Notre Dame is the money getter. You know what I mean? That's a prestigious football program. They bring top dollar. But the way they performed in the ACC championship game, I don't want to see Notre Dame get into the playoffs and lay down like they've done in years past. And they're playing against a grown man, a beast in a team. And you know firsthand,
yes.
if you don't have your chin strap buckled on right, it can get ugly against the Crimson Tide. So me personally, it is what it is. I understand the logistics of the playoff rankings and things like that. It's a money getter. It's a money opportunity. But there's an asterisk behind Ohio State for me and Notre Dame. So I'm just going to say what you probably don't want to say, Kirby, but I understand where you're coming from. Because we watch football and the eye in the sky does not lie.
No, it doesn't. The physicality and the line of scrimmages are so big there. I mean, I look at Alabama's offensive line, and it's, you know, they've got 5 linemen that are going to be playing in the NFL within the next 2 years. They're just extremely physical and big. And it's going to be interesting to see them match up with Notre Dame, and then, you know, if they win, who they'll match up with next.
Yeah, and then, of course, you got, what, Ohio State will play
Clemson.
We saw that last year. Like I said, I have an asterisk behind Ohio State, but they get a chance to right their wrongs, right, in my personal opinion. They beat Clemson, then, of course, they should have been there. But if they lay down against Clemson, you know, the first debate will be, well, they had no business in the playoffs. And speaking of Ohio State, you look at the quarterback matchup, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Justin Fields was the guy that you once coached because of the transfer portal, something I don't like as a former player, because one thing I hate about the transfer portal, it does not teach accountability. Right. You know what I mean? And sometimes you need to leave. Sometimes you don't need to leave. And I'm come from the old school just like you, but the transfer portal is something that I think is handicapping a lot of kids because they don't get what they want as fast as they would like to get it. But when it came to Justin Fields, do you believe that, you know, he should have probably stayed with you guys a little longer, or was it better for both parties to kind of go their separate ways?
That's a great question, B-Mac. He's a great kid. Your sister plays softball here. He's very bright, just well-rounded kid, and so many players on the team really loved him. I think with the new recruiting age that we live in and the hype that follows, you know, the number one premier player, I mean, he and Trevor were really the top two players coming out in the country, and they happened to be 30 miles from each other. And a lot of comparisons happened with Justin to Trevor. So it was very evident to us early on in the year that as Trevor had success and began to play, and I think the Texas A&M game, he got in and played more and more, you know, Justin felt the same way that, hey, I'm as good as him and I should get an opportunity to play. And, you know, at the time we had Jake Fromm, who was playing pretty well. He was playing good football and went toe to toe with Alabama in the SEC championship game. And, you know, we didn't play real good defensively, but Jake did a lot of good things. It was really a tough situation to manage because Justin is extremely talented. Today's day and age with the transfer portal, it gives you a way out. You know, it gives you a way to go and go play somewhere right away. And you can't say it hadn't benefited him, because he got to go to a really good program. He got to play right away, and he's played a lot more football because he chose to go there. So you can't say that it was wrong or right, but I would say what you said earlier, the accountability factor and, you know, guys sticking it out, sometimes it pays off to do that, especially at other positions. Yeah. Quarterback is unique because there's only one.
Yeah.
One, he's only on the field one. You go to DB, you know, it's like if I'm not the best corner, then I need to play safety. I might play nickel. I might play dime. Mm-hmm. So many other places to play and grow as a player and develop, where you could be patient. Quarterback, it's hard because there ain't but one up on the field.
Yeah. Last question. When you look at this current college football season, if you had a vote when it comes to the Heisman Award, who do you believe should win the Heisman?
That's a great question. You know, and I usually wouldn't answer that, but, you know, I'm not going to be politically correct, and I'm going to say who I think the best player is, and everybody will know why I think he's the best player, because of what he's done against Georgia, Devontae Smith.
Ooh.
This is a young man that I had in camp when he was in the 8th and 9th grade and I was at Alabama.
Uh-huh.
He weighed like 125. He was so small in the 8th and 9th grade, and he was so talented. And by the time he got to be maybe a junior or senior, he was like 155. And at one time he was actually committed to Georgia. Not many people remember that. He was
from
Georgia, decommitted to Georgia, and ends up going to Alabama. You know, won the national championship on the last play of the game against us, and then played a phenomenal game against us this year. You know, which we had 2 good corners all draped all over him. You couldn't ask him to cover him any better. He comes
in, sir,
breaks better than anybody I've ever seen. He catches the ball, you know, going back to the quarterback. And to me, he's the best player in college football.
And right now, you know, the money is backing what you're saying. He is the odds on favorite to win the Heisman Award. No question. He is the odds on favorite. And the crazy part about Devontae Smith in this year with him being the favorite to win the Heisman, in the beginning of the season, he didn't even have any odds. You couldn't put any money on him. He was not even on the board. That's the thing, Kirby. His name was nowhere on the board. And I think around mid-October or something like that, he was plus 3,000, right? He was clearly not anywhere in the top of the board. He was plus 3,000. So think about this. When his name first surfaced on the board, he was plus 3,000. If anybody put any money on him, they're smiling from ear to ear because I do believe he will win the Heisman. And speaking of Devontae, and I said this coming into this season, right? We highlighted Jerry Jeudy from last year.
Yep.
Guys, you played against.
Ruggs.
But I said, and this is what I said last, coming into this season, the best pure wide receiver was Devontae Smith last year. Just when you look at the statistics and everything that he did, and I'm like, well, there's not really a big drop off because you got the best pure wide receiver who's probably the best football player too at that position because he's a football player. He's a fast guy, but he's not the biggest guy, but he plays with a big heart. He plays with a lot of energy.
He blocks on the perimeter. He does a lot of good things. And the best thing, the amazing thing to me is, you know, people don't talk about it. He had a choice to come out last year. Like he could have come out in all these first rounds. It was a wide receiver loaded draft. If you go back and look at Jeudy, the CeeDee Lamb, Ruggs, all these great wideouts. I want to say four or five guys went in the first.
Yeah. Jefferson from LSU.
LSU is probably having the best season. If you look at all, and you say, this kid could have came out. He decided to come back to Alabama, and he may walk away with a Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
That is crazy to me.
The first receiver since Desmond Howard, by the way.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So right now, he's the odds-on favorite. And like I said, in the beginning of the season, Kirby, he was not even on the board. No one thought he had a shot to win the Heisman. And hopefully somebody put something on the line when he was plus 3,000 because they're going to cash in big time. Kirby, so let's transition to your career, coaching career, playing career. What people don't – probably some people might not remember about you. Once upon a time, you wore number 16 for Georgia, right? You know what I mean? Wore number 16 with the big shoulder pads, you know, commanding the secondary. You had a successful career playing at Georgia, but when did you eye a coaching career? I know your father coached you as well. He was a ball coach. But at what point in time did you eye coaching the game of football?
Probably when I walked in that Bill Polian's office, the general manager, and he told me that I was no longer going to be part of the Colts. And he said, you can go over to NFL Europe or you can become a coach. And he was like, I think you'll make a really good coach, but your future is not playing safety in the NFL or playing corner. So once I heard that, I went back to Athens and I didn't have much else to do. And a lot of people offered me a couple of business jobs in Atlanta, financial jobs. Yeah. And I said, you know what? I'm going to try this coaching out. And once I tried it out, I kind of fell in love with it. You know, I don't feel like I worked a day of my life, B-Mac, because all I've done is coach.
And that's the key. When you're doing something that you love to do, it doesn't feel like work. You don't get tired of doing it. You know what I mean? Nope. That's why I wanted a transition that was as close to the game of football as possible. And the only thing that I can think of outside of coaching is talking about it. You know what I mean? So I'm right there with you. It does not feel like work. It feels like a part of life. Inhale and exhale. And that's what I'm doing. I'm glad to hear the same thing. That's why you're successful at it. Because when you love what you're doing, you're going to find every way to be successful at it. You know what I mean? So hats off to you. And that's something quality that I say all the time. While you were playing at UGA, you played alongside one of the greatest to ever do it in Champ Bailey, you know, and I remember when I visited Georgia, we talked about this earlier in the show, there was a newspaper clipping that you guys had of me, but it was like, it was Champ Bailey's body, but it had number 8. And the article was, cause I played both ways in high school and it was like, yo, he could be the next Champ Bailey and things like that. And I looked up to Champ as a high school player. And then of course in my professional career, but at what point did you realize, you know, he was destined for greatness when you played with him at Georgia?
His freshman year. So we came out the same year, but I was 5 years. You know, he was 3 years. So we came out the same time, but he came after me. So I had been at Georgia for 2 years. I remember the first time he came to practice and his name was Champ and he had an older brother on the team.
Boss?
Yes. Well, no, Boss was younger.
Oh, so, Boss is younger. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So the older brother not many people talk about was Ronald. And Ronald was like the greatest guy, nicest guy. And the whole, when they signed Ronald, they didn't realize what they were getting in line for, because when they signed Ronald, they got Champ and Boss, both freakiest athletes I've ever been around. But Champ was a freshman. You know how you come out there as a freshman, shirt tail hanging out. You know, you don't look like much. He wasn't fresh and clean like a guy from Miami like you. So he country little South Georgia. He rolls out there wearing number 42 at corner.
Playing corner? No, that don't even look right.
Hey, you ain't supposed to be in 42 if you're you know what I mean? Like, this man's wearing 42. He can't be very good. And he made about two plays out there, and his arms like E.T. He could just reach out and press. And he started as a freshman. He played dime safety. He covered the best receiver. I knew right away. I said, man, this guy is special.
Now, he went on to be special, one of the greatest to do it at UGA, and clearly one of the greatest to do it in the National Football League. And after that, you know, your first big coaching opportunity happened in Tallahassee, Florida. 2002 to 03, you were a graduate assistant, Florida State University under Bobby Bowden, also under Mickey Andrews. Man, what did you learn during your time there at Florida State, you know, from Bobby and from Mickey Andrews?
It was a great experience. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, I worked for Nick, and Nick is like, Saban is probably one of the best defensive back coaches in terms of like technique and coverages and scheme. But I learned effort and toughness from Mickey Andrews. I mean, I used to sit in those meetings and I would want to coach, well, if they do this, we need to check this. We need to do this to stop this. And man, Mickey wouldn't have it. None of that. It was straight jet robber, and it was straight. And let me tell you something. If you didn't cover them or hit them hard enough, you had to hit them harder. You know, there wasn't like answer. You had to hit them harder. And he coached effort to you guys. I used to sit in that meeting. I'd be like, man, this guy, y'all used to run, you know, sprints at the end of practice, and he would either
thumbs up or thumbs down. Thumbs up or thumbs down. I'm down. I got a backside corner who's not running hard enough. Be like,
that's
cool.
It.
Yeah.
Right
I'm
there.
Down. Yeah.
And the standard that y'all held each other to at the end of practice, y'all were flying. And I'd be like, man, these guys are dying to get a thumbs up. You know,
like, hey, but Kirby, we used to really appreciate you because you always gave us that thumbs up. We'd be looking for Kirby, like, we know we're going to get that thumbs up for Kirby.
Hey, I was scared of Darnell Dockett. I was scared of Darnell in the locker.
Hey, but here come Andrews. I'm down. I got a defensive end who's not running fast enough, and he's high as a kite. We're like, come on, Coach, man. I tell people all the time, man, that and he is the one individual throughout my playing career on any level that made me think I can go above and beyond the task that was called upon for me to do. Right.
Exactly.
The mental coaching he displayed and he gave us week in and week out was like you say off record before we started recording, you said he couldn't coach right now. He didn't coach.
Man. Hey, what about goal line? When y'all just do that, smoke technique.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Hey, Kirby. So a few weeks ago, we had Antonio Cromartie on the show. And he talked about that smoke technique. Can you please, as a ball coach, can you please tell our listeners and viewers what the freaking smoke technique was and why it don't make any sense to have a corner involved in that?
How about this? I just walked out of my defensive meeting getting ready for Cincinnati, right? And we're doing goal line today for goal line practice. We're still doing the same goal line. The difference is we have defensive ends doing the smoke. So they weigh 270 pounds. You know, they're the smokers. At Mickey Andrews' goal line technique, he had corners who weighed 175, 180 pounds playing DN and coming off the edge, and they were so low to the ground.
Yes.
Under them.
We had to spill the fullback
over and over.
And he wanted you to go with all the speed you have, maximum speed. Not to mention in our practices, we had to tackle Greg Jones, who's about 250, straight rip city, all muscle. He wanted you to run straight into number six and make sure you knock him back. We're like, Coach, that doesn't even make any sense, Coach.
Yes,
give me a man that's going to get in there and get in a fight. That's what he, give me a DB who's going to get in there and get in a fight.
Hey, Leroy Smith, he loved any DB that was short and could do smoke technique. And
yes, sir.
The hip of the tight end. You had to the hip of the tight end.
Pinch the hip. Yeah, no question, man. Corey Andrews, man, I love him to death because he's a heck of a ball coach. And like I said, man, coming up in the coaching ranks for you, Kirby, man, and it's no surprise you're as successful as you've been, because look who you've been around. I mean, right. Iconic coaching individuals. And then leaving Tallahassee, you get an opportunity to go with old Saint Nick, is what I call him, who likes to deliver the gifts. Nick Saban in 2004. And this is crazy because I looked at you guys' staff, right? At that time, Nick Saban was the head ball coach. You had Jimbo Fisher. You had Derek Dooley. You had Will Muschamp. And just talk about that coaching room that you guys, that you were a part of at that time in 04.
Yeah, that was incredible for me. That was my first time really stepping into the waters of a full-time job. And Bobby Williams was on that staff, who had been head coach at Michigan State and done a tremendous job. He's at Oregon now. I mean, that staff was just unreal how many good coaches were on it. And Nick surrounded us and really coached us. And you know, he always tells that was one of his favorite staffs because he had so many either coaches' sons, because, you know, Derek Dooley was a coach's son, Muschamp was a coach's son. So many of us had kind of grown up around it. And he was tough on us, but nobody ever complained. Nobody ever whined or did anything. We just kept right on going and won a lot of football games with him doing it.
And then Nick goes to Miami, and it's crazy because I don't know if you remember this. When you went with Nick to Miami, the first preseason game, I think, you guys played Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
I got a chance. Yeah, yeah. You were the DB coach. I got a chance to say a few words to you. Then I'm like, man, me and Kirby just keep crossing paths. It happens somehow. But, you know, tell us about that experience and how surprised were you when Nick gave you the call like, yo, Kirby, I want you to – because at that time, Nick was en route. His trajectory of college football was – headed upwards, and then he leaves to go to National Football League. But how surprised were you to get that call, and what was that experience like for you?
That was very unique for me because I didn't have my experience in the NFL was short-lived because I didn't make it. You know, I got cut. So when I got an opportunity to go coach there, I was actually at Georgia as a running backs coach, and I wanted to be on defense. You know, that was my passion, my love. I wanted to be with DBs. So when I got a chance to go to Miami and coach defense, I was like, this is a once-in-a-lifetime. They say, you know, coaching in college is like getting your college degree. Well, coaching in the NFL is like getting your PhD. So I was like, I'm going to get a chance to go coach really good players, learn a lot, and got to be around Dom Capers, some really good coaches. That really helped me to do that. I remember that that night you're talking about against the Steelers, because you know what's really funny is that the receiver on the team was Hines Ward. And Hines and I came into Georgia together. And I forget, I'm the DB coach on the sideline, and you know, Hines was known as a real physical blocker. He was really tough physical. He was holding one of our DBs. And I'm yelling at the official on the sideline, Hines is holding. He's holding. 19, he's holding. And Hines looked at me and smiled. He said, you know they ain't calling that on me in this league. He said, in this league? I was so mad because I played with him.
Yeah. And you know what type of play he was. Oh, no question. No question. And, of course, you know, you guys leave Miami and go to Alabama, right? And, you know, just looking at that opportunity. And one thing I can say about college football, you know, I got to tip my hat to great individuals who do it for a very, very long time. And Nick Saban has been an outstanding coach. But because of his success, the coaches that coach under him, they get head coaching opportunities as well. But it seems like for whatever reason, whenever his assistants face off against him as a head coach, they don't do well. He's 23-0. What do you think is the recipe for his dominance against his assistants when it comes to head coach on head coach?
I tell people this all the time. His resume against everybody is that way.
No question.
So with the winning percentage is 100% against his assistants. That's incredible. He's 23-0. In most of those games, his team was much better than the other team, regardless of who was coaching them. And you look at his record against anybody since he's been in Alabama, it's pretty strong. You know, I think Gus Malzahn had a pretty good record against him, and Hugh Freeze did a pretty good job there at Ole Miss and got him twice. But outside of that, there's nobody really beating Alabama a lot in terms of consistently, because they got really good players. He does a really good job of not beating himself, and he has an excellent staff, and he's got good players. You know, he'll be the first to admit inevitably it's probably going to happen if you play enough games, and if one of his former staffers has a really talented team, they're going to have an opportunity to. And, hey, we've had as good a chance as any. You know, we let them at the half this year. And then the other two times we didn't finish in the fourth. So we know we've got a good team. We know we've got a great opportunity, but eventually it's going to happen. But he's as good a ball coach, and he'll go down in history in a really competitive era. You know, there were these eras back in the old days where a team just dominated. He's been in an extremely competitive era.
Yeah.
He's been dominant.
Yeah, his overall winning percentage, I think it's like 88% or something like that, which is crazy. You know, the consistency is clearly, it has been well documented. And I think UGA, if I'm not mistaken, they tried to make a play at you in 2010 to be their DC, and you said no. And I think that surprised a lot of people because you played ball at Georgia. You had ties. You had legit ties to UGA, but you said no. Why did you turn that opportunity down and decided to stay with Bama?
It's one of the toughest decisions I've ever had to make, because it was a career path of, you know, I knew Georgia could be successful. I knew we could go there and be really good on defense. I felt that we could do the same in Alabama. And you're in a pretty secure spot when you're saying, okay, I'm working for a guy that I know we're going to be able to win championships. I'm growing as a coach. I'd been with Nick at that point for maybe 4 years, maybe 5 years. I think we just won our first national championship against Texas out in the Rose Bowl and mm-hmm. a big win and had an opportunity to go home. But I just didn't know if it was right yet. You know, B-Mac, and you're just like, man, I don't know if it's the right time to do this. I still want to grow and develop. And I wanted my next step. I mean, to be a head coach. I wanted to learn to be, I wasn't ready to be a head coach then, but I wanted to become a better a head coach and be in a position to do that, and just never felt like it was right. And I talked to my wife about it, and just wasn't time to come home, but it paid off in waiting.
It all played out well for you. Before we transition to UGA, you got any funny stories with Nick Saban?
Yeah, I've got quite a few funny stories about Nick. One I rarely like to share, but I'll share is in golf. He's probably the most competitive guy, and I love golf. I compete in golf. I enjoy golf. It's fun. You know, not everybody enjoys playing golf with Nick because he's not like, you know, the most personal. He's not going to go out there and just talk and shoot shit stories on the tee box. He's trying to win, right?
Yeah.
Trying to beat you. And so he, on the first tee box, everybody has a kind of unwritten rule. You know, you get two off the first tee, like get warmed up. I'm going to hit two balls off the first tee. So I hit my first one bad and I'm like, all right, I got to get my other one. We didn't warm up. We don't stretch. I mean, we go straight from the office, go play. So I hit my second one out in the fairway. He hits his first one out in the fairway pretty good. And he doesn't use what he calls his mulligan. So I'm keeping that. Well, I'm like, where I play, you don't get a mulligan like later on. You can either use it on first hole, but that's it. So me and him are in a dead lock match. We get to hole 18. I'm finally up on him, like two strokes up on 18. I got him. I hit the ball right down the middle on 18. I know I'm going to win now. He hits his drive on 18 out in the woods, and he says, I'm going to use my mulligan. Like, from the first hole, he going to bring out the mulligan and use it on that hole. And I'm like, you can't do that. You know, mulligan ends up like tying me on the score and still claims I never beat him. And I'm like, that's not right. You know, that's just, you can't pull out a mulligan on 18.
I didn't know he was nice on the course though. That's new information. Yeah. Okay. So what about this? Let me hit you with this question. If you could rank the top five coaches you golf with, right? Who would be in that top five amongst all the coaches you golf with and you respect them as a golfer and they respect you as a golfer? Who would be in that top five?
Wow. I would probably say Hugh Freeze. Mm-hmm. The best I've ever been around.
Hugh Freeze would be number one.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze would be one.
Okay.
Nick would probably be two, and that's amazing because, you know, Nick's a little bit older, but Nick hits the ball really well for his age. So Saban's two for me. Three, man, I don't forget anybody. I'd probably say Matt Luke would be three. Mel Tucker can play some golf at Michigan State. Coach can hit a golf ball. And last would probably be Gus Malzahn.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty, I would love to see that. I think we can do like a celebrity, you know, golf match with college coaches, you know, maybe the proceeds can go to wherever charity would be. I think that would be major.
That would be fun. That'd be great television for people.
No question. We need to get that at CBS.
Golf too. Some guys swinging and missing.
Yeah. Cause when you, the names that you mentioned, unless I guess if you personally know them or know someone that know them, you might not know that they really play a lot of golf. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And they're pretty good at the sport. So that would be definitely would be dope. That would be quality content, I think. Hey, CBS, shout out to CBS. Let's see if we can make that happen.
Let's
transition to your current opportunity. Like you said, in 2010, they wanted you to be a DC, right? Yep. At UGA. You felt like the time was not right for you to move. And eventually you wanted your next step to be a head coach. UGA calls you. How special was that moment for you?
It was awesome. I mean, it's where I always wanted to be. I wanted to come home. You rarely get, you know, you want a head job somewhere and you don't control where that is. So it's kind of like, well, what if it's this place or what if it's that place? Do you take it? Or, you know, I couldn't sit there and wait on Georgia forever because Mark Richt had a lot of success. He'd been very successful at Georgia and I didn't know if it was ever going to come open. So, it came open and they made the call. And, you know, I know my wife was happy because she got to move closer to her parents. She's a Georgia basketball player, women's basketball player that played here. And then I got to move closer to my parents. So it ended up being just a great opportunity. And, you know, it's one of the top 5-10 jobs in the country in facilities and financial support and athletic department support. It's all there.
And how often do you think about that 2017 national championship game?
Ooh, well, you know, you get so busy as a coach, you get to keep your mind. When it hits me mostly is when the national championship's going on, you know, and you're watching it and you know what it means to play in that game. And, that whole time seems so surreal for me and us, because it was wild. We had to fly to California to play in the Rose Bowl. You know, we come back and win that game. Yeah. And then, you know, we're flying back on an all night flight and we're 6 days away from kicking off.
And yo, Curry, real quick, that's something I don't like. I don't like the first ball game being so far away, especially right. when you know where the national championship game is going to be. I understand you want to solidify your obligations and the bowl rights and things like that, but you have to really take in consideration the players.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's tough.
The parents.
Like you just said,
how about last year or whatever year? What year was Alabama and Clemson played in California, right?
Yep.
And they're playing way out there. And you got all these kids' families having to travel to go play in this game, you know,
here's
a
tough
played out that way. It's tough now, but all that's predetermined and a lot of it's based on money. But when you're having a national championship game against two Southeastern teams and it's being played out west, those parents traveling, it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. And the thing that I remember about that ball game, number one, that was an entertaining ball game. If you love ball, you appreciated how both teams went at each other, how both coaches made adjustments on the fly. But when Tua Tagovailoa came into that ball game, number one, you didn't know a lot about him. You knew, as every top flight recruit, they have potential. But did you think or did you anticipate him coming in there with the coolness that he displayed and just was letting it go like how he did?
No, it was a shock. You know, what got us is I'd heard all year from friends in Tuscaloosa that they liked the younger quarterback better than Jalen. I kept hearing that. I would hear that. Now, of course, I didn't think we were going to play him because we weren't scheduled to play him. I thought, well, if we make it the SEC championship, we'll play Alabama. And then it played out where we played Auburn. And I'd heard all this stuff about, you know, the younger quarterbacks can throw the ball better. He can do more stuff, but he was getting to play mop up time, you know, and they didn't have many games that they got forced to do it. And then in our game, you know, I knew at halftime, I said, guys, they may have to make a change here because they're struggling. They're not scoring. People forget that he came in and actually threw a pick on a strange play, like a busted play. The receiver was blocking downfield, and DeAndre Baker picks off a pass.
Yep.
Tua threw to him. The receiver must have got the wrong call. Like, he thought it was a sprint out run, and he throws a pick. And I'm like, man, this guy's, you know, he's struggling a little bit. We sacked him a couple times, had him confused, and then the next thing you know, he starts throwing dimes. And the throw he made against quarter halves, you know, corner should jam him. He looks the safety off.
I was so amazed to see a freshman look the safety off and knew exactly where he was going. He didn't hesitate. When he looked the safety off and went straight to Devontae and dropped it, and as a safety, Kirby, you got to understand, and you played the game, and a lot of people don't understand that. The eyes can manipulate you in many different ways. And me personally, if I was at safety, I'm not anticipating this freshman to look me off and then go backside. So I'm following his eyes because I'm thinking his eyes going to take me to where the ball is. But that play might be one of the more, I think that probably his biggest play in his collegiate career, because just the magnitude of the ball game and the professional skill set that he displayed as a freshman was something that you don't usually see. And you got to know ball to understand and appreciate that type stuff.
Absolutely. It was like he knew what he was doing at a young age. He knew the whole time, I'm going to look over here and I'm going to bang it back there. And he did. It was right after he had just taken a sack too.
Yeah. Yeah. And think about that. The recipient of that pass is the guy we highlighted earlier, and Devontae Smith, just a ball. He been making plays, like you said, eighth grade,
forever.
Ninth grade, forever.
Talented.
I know you happy he's going on now. And get ready to get drafted.
Get him out of here. Get him out of our league. Him and Waddle.
Oh, no question. How fast is Waddle, Kirby?
Because, oh, my God. Listen. Let me tell you something. He can go now.
Is he faster than Ruggs, you think?
That's going to be interesting to see what he runs. We got people on our staff that think he's faster than Ruggs.
I think he is.
I don't know how healthy he'll be, but he can run.
Yeah, no question. No question about it. And when you look at college football, to be successful in college football, you got to be able to recruit. And Alabama has seven straight number one recruiting classes, many of which you were part of. You were bringing in some top flight prospects when you were there. But Georgia broke that streak, coming in at number one in 2018. What did that moment signal for you? And do you always measure yourself when it comes to recruiting against the likes like Alabama and some of the other elite schools in the SEC?
Yeah, I always try to look at it, be back at the end of the guys' careers. Like this year, we go back and we take a look and say, all right, our fourth-year guys, how do they turn out? Did they reach their potential? Did they not reach their potential? The three-year guys, you know, you'll have some juniors come out that are actually in the class, the younger, and I always want to measure them on the back end because it's such a, you know, the recruiting rankings they're not always accurate. They don't, I mean, they're closer to accurate than anything else, but they're not perfect. They don't know, you know, a level a kid plays on and things like that. So we try to look at it on the back end and say, how did we do? How many of these kids graduated? How many of these kids ended up being, you know, NFL prospects? And how many, you know what, just got burnt out and maybe never got good enough? And we try to look at it from that perspective. And we've been fortunate. I mean, we good thing is we got one of the best states for high school football. And then Florida's just right down the road. So
yeah.
5 hour radius is some really, really good players.
No question. Like you said, some programs in college football, the name itself recruits. Right. And then, of course, the coaches got to come in and finish the deal. And luckily for you, you had a program. When you see that UGA, when you see that G, you understand who's walking through your hallways, who's coming in your neighborhood. So that's a big benefit to have for you and some of the other elite coaches in college football. Kirby, we're getting ready to wrap it up. But before we do, I want to transition and hit you to the superlative part of our show. I hit you with rapid fire questions. You give me your unbiased, honest answer. The first question for you, I know fans want to hear this answer coming from you. The biggest recruit that got away.
Oh, wow.
Okay, it's a two-part. Give me your answer as an assistant and your answer as a head coach. The biggest recruit that got away.
The biggest one that got away at Georgia. Oh, my man, my mind just drew a blank. You got to help me out. Golly.
Offense, defense?
The Carolina Panthers draft pick, played at Auburn. Carolina Panthers draft pick, top 10 last year.
Derrick Brown.
Derrick Brown. Golly, I don't know why I forgot that one.
Derrick Brown.
Got away. I always tell people, if we get Derrick Brown, we may beat Alabama in that game.
Derrick Brown was a grown man.
He's a grown man.
Ooh, yeah, because he is from Georgia. Man. You know what's funny? I did an Instagram live with Derrick Brown during the offseason when the pandemic hit, and he mentioned to me the hate that he had for Georgia because he went to Auburn and he was from Georgia. Yeah, it makes sense now.
Right down the road. He would be one of the biggest ones. And then the next one is an assistant at Alabama. We got most of the guys we recruited. I probably lost a couple guys while at Alabama. And most of the time I lost them, you lost them to LSU or you lost them to Georgia. Now, ironically, I had a lot of kids that I recruited. I would say maybe Nick Chubb is probably the best I had because we tried to get him in Alabama. But people forget this. We had just signed at Alabama in one recruiting class, Alvin Kamara. All right. And Derrick Henry and two other backs. So Alvin, Derrick Henry came, two other backs, and Nick Chubb's following that up the next year. He said, no, thank you. I'm not. he went to Georgia.
Hey, you're a smart man because one thing about Bama, especially when you were there, I had no problem recruiting running backs.
None
at all. They still do a great job, but man, listen, Nick Chubb made the best decision for him because it worked out. You know what I mean? And one thing I can say about Alabama and Georgia, when it comes to running backs, you guys do it best when you're recruiting. That is, you know, you guys do a phenomenal job in recruiting big time backs that go on to have professional careers. You played in a lot of title games, especially when you were with Alabama. But what's your most memorable title game with the Crimson Tide? Title win with
probably
Alabama.
LSU. But we did the rematch game, one of the most games I've ever seen, where we just lost 9-6 and we had to turn around and play them about a month later, and we shut them out in Louisiana in the Super Bowl and shut them down and beat them. And it was Jordan Jefferson. You know, he was a quarterback. So it was a hell of a game, but that's probably my most memorable just because you get a shutout in college football. That's unheard of. That's when Mickey Andrews has one of the baseballs with a nail through it. If you get a shutout, you get an extra toy.
No question. For us, you're doing with Florida State, you shut out, we get added tomahawks on that helmet.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Toughest quarterback you've ever game plan for?
Golly, man. I would have to go with Cam Newton. You know, that was a nightmare, but just because he was so big and so physical, the plays he could run, I mean, you could have everybody there and you couldn't tackle him. You know, he went to the SEC now, grown man league, and he rushed for so many yards. I mean, Manziel was a nightmare, but he just didn't physically beat you up.
Did you play against Deshaun Watson when you were at Bama?
You know, we did. We beat him in the national championship.
You did beat him, yeah.
It was a nightmare there now. He was unbelievable, but he came back the next year and beat Bama. But my last game at Bama was the game we beat Clemson in the national championship. And
y'all won that game.
They scored at will. That's Kenyon Drake, kickoff return. O.J. Howard played big. We made a bunch of plays on offense to beat them.
Yeah. But Cam, like you said, Cam Newton was spectacular. And that game he had against Bama, against you guys. Woof. I mean, what else you could ask for from a quarterback, right?
He took it over.
No question. Last question for you. And I really want to hear your answer. And I need an answer from you, right? It's a game 7 like situation, championship on the line. It's life or death. You win, you stay alive. You lose, you probably die. You need a head coach for this particular ball game. Who are you taking, Nick Saban or Bobby Bowden?
Oh, wow. That's a tough one right there now. Golly. And you say I got to have an answer to this one?
Yes, you got to have an answer to this.
I'm going to take Nick as the defense coordinator, and I'm going to take Bobby as the OC.
You going to finesse me? You going to finesse me? And you know, if you do that, you know who's going to have something to say. Mickey Andrews. He's going to be cussing you out from left to right.
There's no doubt about that. Mickey's going to be the DB coach. He'll be working for Mickey. People like that.
Hey, you better have some mentally strong, tough DBs because he's going to run everybody out of town.
Yeah, they'll all quit. They'll be in the portal.
No question. They'll be in the portal like tomorrow. They will be in the portal instantly. But, hey, Curry, man, appreciate you for giving us a little bit of your time. We know you're busy, man. Best of luck this upcoming Friday against Cincinnati. Stay healthy. Continue to do the job you've been doing. I got to come check you out in Athens, too, when everything gets back to being a bit normal. I got to come check you out. I'm not too far away from you. So, man, it's always been a pleasure. You've been an outstanding individual since the first day I met you in 1999. In December, I can't remember what weekend that was when I met you here in Atlanta. But man, it's a pleasure, man, being in your life and you being in my life, man. Continue to keep doing what you're doing. I'm only a phone call away. And once again, man, appreciate you for joining us here on All Things Covered.
Thank you, B man. Y'all got an incredible show. I've loved following it and following your success. And to be able to say that I coached a guy like you and to see you transition your career from on the field to off makes me, I'm just pumped for you that you've been able to do it. You tell Pat P, now I still remember that game when him and Julio, LSU and Bama were going at it. I think he had to avoid me because Julio got the best of him that night. So Pat P didn't want to come on the show with me. You know what I mean?
But hey, I'm going to make sure I tell him that. And also too, Pat thinks he's a top flight golfer. So at some point in time, when you and all these top flight coaches that you named got some free time, we got to try.
He played in a tournament, Arian's tournament over the summer over at where my lake house is. And I saw him. He was dressed to the nines, man. He was dressed clean and he was knocking the hell out of the ball.
He can go. Yeah, he can go. He got a freaking digital range in his house. Like golfing is his thing. I got to find a way to talk to the powers that be with CBS. I think that would be must-see TV. Guys like yourself, Saban, Hugh Freeze, Mel, all you elite college coaches.
It was good. Mark Ingram could hit the ball. Mark Ingram can hit it. Yes, sir.
Because I asked Pat about his top golfers. We had J.R. Smith on the show who also golfs a lot.
Yeah.
And Pat didn't mention Mark Ingram. I know he said Adam Thielen can go. He said Adam Thielen is very, very good on the course. So, I mean, that would be lovely. I mean, that'd be great if we can make that happen.
You tell Pat P we'll go playing. Hey, he's got more money than me, so we can gamble a little bit.
Hey, but one thing I can tell you about coaches, your check is guaranteed, Kirby.
Yeah, it's guaranteed till you're fired.
It's guaranteed. But I appreciate you, Curry. We're going to tune in and check you guys out this upcoming Friday against Cincinnati. Once again, join us here, All Things Covered. Kirby Smart, you are our third head coach on the show. We had Mike Tomlin on. We had Jimbo Fisher on. And now we got Kirby Smart on. And all the coaches that came before you, they're doing real well.
Good luck. I like it.
No question. Call me Rabbit Foot, coach.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Kirby Smart, and thanks to everyone listening and watching us on this episode of All Things Covered. Please make sure you subscribe and leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We'll be back again tomorrow with a full-length episode with Pat Peterson, where you can expect all things to be covered. Peace.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount+.